Hey everyone, and welcome to another deep dive. Today we're going to be exploring something you might not think is very exciting, at least at first. We're talking about insect life in clear-cut forests.
Yeah, clear cuts. Not exactly the image that pops into your head when you think about like vibrant ecosystems, right?
Yeah.
But that's what makes this so interesting. We'll be looking at a paper called Assemblages of Flower-Visiting Insects in Clear Cuts Are Rich and Dynamic.
Catchy title.
Right. It really grabs you. So in this research, scientists went to clear-cut forests in southern Sweden, and they basically set out to catch as many insects as possible. They use these colorful pan traps.
There's little bowls, right?
Exactly. They're brightly colored, and they attract all sorts of insects. And what the researchers found was pretty amazing. They ended up catching over 13,000 insects, representing 184 different species.
Yeah.
That's a lot of insects for an area we often think of as kind of, well, desolate. It really is. And it just goes to show that life finds a way, even in places we might not expect it. You know, we tend to think of biodiversity as being highest in like pristine, untouched forests. But this study shows that even disturbed landscapes can be incredibly rich in life.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just the usual suspects either. I mean, they found bees and butterflies, of course, but they also found a ton of these flower-visiting beetles. I had no idea there were so many beetles that relied on flowers.
Yeah, beetles are often overlooked when we talk about pollination, but they're actually a really important part of the pollinator community. It's like a whole hidden world out there.
So it makes you wonder, were all these insects, like forest dwellers, that were just, I don't know, making do in this changed environment?
Well, that's where things get interesting. Turns out a lot of the species they found actually prefer open habitats, you know, like meadows or agricultural areas. They're adapted to those kinds of disturbed environments, and they actually thrive in the temporary conditions of a clear cut.
Huh. So it's not necessarily that they were forced out of the forest and had to make a new home in the clear cut.
Right. They were probably already there in the surrounding landscape. And then when the forest was cleared, it created this like perfect opportunity for them to move in and really flourish.
So it's kind of like they're ecological opportunists in a way.
Yeah. They're able to adapt to these changing conditions and take advantage of new resources, which is pretty amazing when you think about it.
So we've got this bustling community of insects in this freshly cleared area.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens as the clear cut starts to grow back? Does the insect party just keep going?
You'd think so, right? More plants, more food, more habitat. But that's not actually what the researchers found.
Really?
Yeah. They found that as the clear cut aged, the abundance of many insect species actually decreased.
Wait, so it's like the opposite of what you'd expect? You'd think there'd be more insects as the area recovered?
Exactly. It's counterintuitive. But it really makes you think about what's driving these changes in the insect community.
So what's going on?
Well, the researchers dug into that question. They looked at things like flower abundance, the presence of bare soil, and even exposed bedrock, trying to figure out what was causing this shift.
Okay, let's start with the flowers. More flowers usually mean more pollinators, right?
You'd think so, right? I mean, flowers are what attract pollinators, but the study found that it's actually a more complex relationship than that.
How so?
Well, some insect groups did increase as flower abundance went up, but others actually declined.
Oh, interesting. So it's not just a simple equation of more flowers equals more insects.
Nope. It's more nuanced than that. And a part of it might have to do with the way the insects were caught.
You mean with those pan traps?
Yeah. Because when there are a lot of flowers around, the insects might have more options and be less likely to go for the pan traps. It's like if you have a choice between a fancy restaurant and a food truck.
You might be less likely to choose the food truck if there are a ton of other options available.
Right. So it might look like there are fewer insects in areas with more flowers, but it could just be an artifact of the way they were collected.
Ah, so it's important to consider those kinds of biases when we interpret the results.
Exactly. It's a reminder that even seemingly straightforward methods can have their limitations.
Okay, so it's not just about the flowers. What about those other things you mentioned, like the bare soil and leftover wood from the logging?
Right. Well, those things are really important for certain species, especially those that nest in the ground or in deadwood.
Okay.
Well, solitary bees are a good example. They often dig burrows in the ground or use existing cavities in deadwood to lay their eggs.
So a messy clear cut is actually good for them.
In a way, yes. Because it provides those essential nesting resources. So what we might consider messy is actually really important habitat complexity for a lot of species.
It's all about perspective, right?
Yeah.
What we see as a mess, they see as a home.
Exactly. And the more diverse those resources are, the wider the range of species that can be supported.
And speaking of diversity, I was reading about how this study actually found one bee species that was more abundant near exposed bedrock.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It seems so counterintuitive. You wouldn't think bees would be hanging out on bare rock.
Well, we don't know for sure why they were there, but it could be because of the specific plants that grow near bedrock. Or maybe the rock creates a warmer microclimate that the bees prefer.
A little ecological mystery.
It is, and it just goes to show that there's still so much we don't know about how these ecosystems work.
So we've got this picture of a clear cut as this kind of temporary but bustling hub of insect life. But it sounds like there's a lot more to the story than meets the eye.
Definitely. And what's really fascinating is that these clear cuts are supporting a mix of species from both forests and open landscapes.
It's like they're this bridge between two different worlds.
Exactly. It challenges our idea of clear cuts as just these isolated disturbances. They actually play a role in the bigger picture of how species move and interact across the landscape.
That's a great way to put it. It's like they're these little stepping stones, helping species move from one area to another.
And that can be really important for maintaining biodiversity across a region.
Now, I'm curious about how the researchers actually gathered all this data. I mean, did they just wander around counting every insect they saw?
I can't imagine doing that.
Right.
They actually used a very specific method using those pan traps we talked about earlier. And they used three different colors, blue, white, and yellow.
And why different colors?
Well, each color attracts different types of insects. So they were trying to get a representative sample of the whole insect community.
It's like they were setting out different kinds of bait for different fish.
Exactly. But as we discussed earlier, there are those potential biases to keep in mind. Like the fact that pan traps can be influenced by things like flower abundance.
Right, right. So the data might not perfectly reflect the true abundance of every insect species.
That's true. It's just a snapshot, a piece of the puzzle.
But still a valuable piece.
Oh, absolutely. It gives us a glimpse into this fascinating world that we might not otherwise see.
And speaking of seeing things in new ways, we've been talking about these clear cuts as these temporary habitats. But what about the history of the land? Does it matter?
You know, that's another really interesting aspect of this study. They found that the insect communities were also influenced by what the land was used for before it was forested.
Oh, wow. So it's like the past is still present, even in these seemingly new environments.
It is. It's like the land has a memory, and it shapes the communities that emerge in these clear cuts. So, for example, they found that clear cuts that were once meadows had a greater diversity of insects than those that were previously forested.
So the legacy of that meadow lives on, even after the trees have grown back.
Exactly. It speaks to the lasting impact of human actions on the landscape.
And it makes you realize that we can't just look at a piece of land in isolation. We need to consider its whole history to understand how to best manage it for the future.
I completely agree. It's all connected. Yeah, it's like you can't erase the past completely. It's still there, influencing the present.
Fascinating. So these seemingly simple environments are actually layered with all this history. And speaking of complexity, we've talked about, like, who's in this insect community in clear cuts? But what about the why? What's making them choose to live there?
Well, the research points to a few key things, and honestly, some of them are a bit surprising. One of the biggest is something we touched on before, the age of the clear cut. Remember how we were talking about the insect community actually changing over time?
Yeah, it's like the opposite of what I expected. You'd think more insects as the area grows back.
Right.
More plants, more food, more hiding places.
Right. That's what you'd think. But that's what makes this research so cool. It really makes you stop and think. It suggests that these short-term changes, you know, in the insect community are tied to, like, the resources that are available. Mm-hmm. What pops into your head when you picture a brand new clear cut?
Okay, so lots of sun, I guess. Those first plants that pop up. Maybe some wildflowers. Oh, and those big piles of logs and branches from the logging.
Exactly. That's the stuff that draws in certain species. But then as time goes on, the clear cut changes. Those early plants might start to fade away. The soil gets covered up and those logs start to break down.
So it's like there's this window of opportunity for some insects, right? They rush in, take advantage of all the good stuff, and then their numbers drop as things change.
Yeah, it's like this perfectly timed dance. Each species coming in at just the right moment.
Makes you wonder if that's actually beneficial for biodiversity overall. Like maybe these temporary booms in insect populations actually help them in the long run. Even if their numbers go down later, maybe those clear cuts give them a boost.
Yeah, like a ripple effect, right? It shows how important it is to think about all these different habitats as part of a bigger system. Even though a clear cut is, like, temporary, the effects on all the different species might spread way beyond that one spot.
Okay, so we've got the age of the clear cut, we've got the changing resources. Are there any other factors at play here?
Well, the research also found some pretty interesting interactions happening between different species. Remember those flower-visiting beetles?
The ones I was surprised about?
There's ones. Well, some of those beetles are actually predators. They're not going to the flowers for nectar. They're there to ambush other insects.
Whoa, so it's a buffet, but not the kind they were expecting.
Exactly. And that predator-prey thing can really shake up the whole community. You can imagine, in a clear cut with lots of these predatory beetles, there might be fewer of certain pollinators, which could then affect the plants that need those pollinators.
All connected.
Yeah, it's like a chain reaction.
Hmm.
Ecology is all about understanding how all those connections work together.
Before we go any further, I want to go back to the pan traps for a minute. We talk about how they can be affected by, like, how many flowers there are. Are there any other things that could make the results a little misleading?
That's a good question. It's really important to think about that when we look at any scientific study. Pan traps are great, but like any tool, they have limitations. For example, some insect species might be way better at avoiding them than others.
So it's possible they didn't catch all the insects that were actually out there.
Exactly. It's just a snapshot, you know? And then there's the fact that pan traps only really catch insects that are active during the day and are drawn to those specific colors. Think about all the nocturnal insects, or the ones that use, like, smell or sound to find what they're looking for. They wouldn't show up in the data at all.
So it's important to keep that in mind, right? That we're only seeing a part of the picture.
Always. And that's part of what makes science so exciting. There's always something new to figure out.
Okay, so big picture. The insect community in a clear cut is constantly changing. All kinds of factors affect who lives there. But what does all this mean for, you know, people who aren't scientists? Why should we care about what's going on in these temporary spots?
Well, I think there are some important lessons here for all of us. First of all, it reminds us that even disturbed landscapes have value. They're full of life, and they can even be important connections between other ecosystems. It challenges how we think about what makes an environment healthy or important.
It's like, don't judge a book by its cover, right?
Exactly. There's a lot going on beneath the surface. And second, it shows how important it is to think about the long-term effects of what we do, you know, how we use the land. Decisions we make now can shape these ecosystems for years to come.
It's like we have a responsibility to understand those effects and make choices that are good for the whole system.
Absolutely. And then finally, I think it's just amazing to see how adaptable and resilient nature can be. Even when things are disrupted, life finds a way.
Yeah, that's a hopeful thought, especially these days.
It is. There's still so much beauty and wonder out there, even in unexpected places.
It really does make you realize that there's so much life happening all around us, even in places we might not think to look.
And it shows how connected we are to all of it, too. Our actions, you know, have consequences for these ecosystems. It's something we have to keep in mind.
Speaking of actions and consequences, I keep thinking about that finding that clear cuts in former meadows had more insect diversity. What does that tell us about, like, how we manage forests in general?
Well, I think it really highlights how important the history of a place is. We can't just look at a forest or a field as it is right now. We have to understand where it came from, what it used to be, to figure out how to take care of it.
So you're saying a clear cut might actually be good for biodiversity if it used to be a meadow? That's wild.
It is, isn't it? It suggests we need to be more careful, more thoughtful about how we manage these landscapes. We can't just use the same approach everywhere.
Like a one-size-fits-all solution isn't going to work.
Exactly. We need to consider the whole story of a place, its unique characteristics, to find the best way forward.
It's almost like we need to be forest historians as well as forest managers.
I like that. And it also shows how important it is to bring together different kinds of knowledge, you know. Scientists, land managers, people who live in these areas, they all have something to contribute.
Before we wrap up our deep dive into the world of clear cuts, I want to touch on something that's been in the back of my mind. We've talked about all the benefits of these habitats for insects, but are there any potential downsides to clear cutting?
That's a really important question, and it's definitely something that people have different opinions about. While clear cuts can be valuable for some species, it's important to remember they're not the same as an untouched forest. You know, a forest that's been there for centuries.
So they can't just replace those old growth forests.
Exactly. Those forests have a complexity, a stability that's really special, and clear cuts just can't replicate that.
So it's about finding that balance, I guess.
Yeah.
Recognizing that clear cuts have a role to play, but also making sure we're protecting those large, undisturbed areas as well.
Absolutely. It's not about choosing one or the other. It's about managing our forests in a way that benefits everyone, you know, both humans and the ecosystem as a whole.
Well, I think we've explored a lot of ground today. We've gone from thinking about clear cuts as these kind of barren wastelands to seeing them as these dynamic, complex ecosystems with their own unique value. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
I'd say the next time you're out in nature and you see a clear cut, don't just pass it by. Take a moment to really look at it. Think about all the life that's happening there, the connections, the history. It might surprise you.
It's a good reminder that there's always more to discover, even in places we might not expect. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and until next time, keep exploring.